All right, so I borrowed a play from Pastor Dave's book, and he says that the Holy Spirit usually shows up for him around 11 o'clock on Saturday night, so we thought that's just the way that it went. So we, last night, 11 o'clock, we buckled down. No, I mean, that's kind of true, but yeah, so I just, I guess I want to start by an introduction and kind of just, I guess, give you what we're sharing today, what you can expect. And I think, like, ultimately, this is kind of a prayer, I guess, and an encouragement. As the writer of Hebrews says, encourage one another each day so your heart does not become hardened with sin. That's what we want to do, is we want to share our heart with you a little bit this day. So you know how you can pray for us, but ultimately we want it also to be encouraging, that it might resonate with your spirit and your hearts, and we might not be alone in this walk of life that we have here. One thing that's kind of interesting is, like, life is so dynamic, and there's so many parts going on. Like, I was thinking about, like, we have four kids, and it's one thing to raise a two-year-old, but raising a two-year-old when you have a three-year-old is completely different. Raising a two-year-old when you have, like it always changes. So the playbook changes. Like, how we raised one two-year-old is different than how we raise the next three two-year-olds. And life is a lot like that. One thing I've done is I've ran a few trail marathons, and it's a complete opposite, because I can run, I can work out, I can go and scope out the trail, I can run upwards of the mileage that I'm going to do, and then race day comes, and I have a pretty good picture of what to expect, how my body can perform, and if I'm feeling healthy, I know what the outcome will be. But a lot of times in life, in relationships, in marriage, in parenting, in working, like, it's just your playbook is open, and you're going. There's no, you don't hit rewind and go back and try again. So, yeah, so that's just kind of like one observation I have of life here. So we're going to go through, and I'm going to start by kind of just sharing some common things that Steph and I over the last 15 years have shared together about how we want to live our life. So we'll spend some time on that. And then from there, we're going to transition to, like, what it looks like to kind of flesh those out and how difficult that is when the thing of life comes in and throws all different kind of things at you, and you have this idealistic way of how you want it to be, and then you have the reality of what you're doing and how to process through that. And yeah, so one thing that Steph and I have, and I'm not sure if it's maybe a calling or a vision or a way of life, but a phrase that I don't know where it came from for us, but maybe the last 10 years, it came up, and that's a faithful presence, that we want to be a faithful presence. And a faithful presence is, in short, just to be faithful in what you are in the presence of, and to trust that God is doing work in your own life and in the life of those that we share the presence with. So that faithful presence right now, a faithful presence will call us to be faithful, that God is working inside of us if we don't think he is, if we don't feel us, and trusting that God is working in who we share that presence with. And right now, it's you. When we're at the grocery store, it's that cashier. And, like, being able to pause, to have a moment, to have that presence, to share that space, and, like, whatever that other person is, who they are, their background, like, really to have faith and trust that God is working in their life. So with this idea of faithful presence, there was some things that we were pretty intentional about, like how we wanted to live our life and decisions that we would make that would create those opportunities of presence for us. So we have four of them. We'll each share a few here. But I guess, so the first one is, we decided that we wanted to have a mortgage in town. And so we, I guess it was 4 years ago, we
almost five years ago,
we actually bought a house in Grand Marais in town. And up until that point, we rented mostly outside of town, but we were very intentional. We wanted to be in town, and that is for a number of things, but a few of them are, one is like when you're in town, like you are exposed. There's exposure there. So we have neighbors that we see, and that gives opportunities to work through neighborhood like relationships and dynamics. Also in the living in town, that gives us the opportunity to be present when if we decide to walk to the post office or walk somewhere, or we know the people who routinely are walking their dogs and around the block. It's just like it gives us this exposure and this place to be part of that neighborhood. So that is one part that we were very intentional about wanting to create a faithful presence, is where we would establish our physical house and where we would build our home. Mic pass.
Jeez. Oh boy.
Another thing we were, is this up high enough? Very intentional with is choosing to send our kids to a public school. For now, that's where they're at. And we knew that we would be part of their relationships with their peers, and wanted to have a relationship with their teachers and parent-teacher conferences and the curriculum content. We knew that that was something we had to be very careful of, and would take extra time to have those conversations. We've also had conversations about some of the social norms about identity and gender, and we've had to walk through all of those things, and it's given us an opportunity to stay in communication with our kids and have a very real life practical example of what that looks like. And it has some really good things that have come and some really hard things, but we were intentional with that. I also am working in a public school setting, so as an educator, I saw that as another avenue for me to know kids in our community and families, and has branched out our community to Grand Portage and to Schroeder. And I've really been blessed by that, and so that is another area that we see our faithful presence playing out in those day-to-day choices.
Then kind of the last thing of intentional decision, and I guess is myself or we as being a business owner, and being able to own a business which would allow you to create a presence on all fronts. So I'm able not only to create a culture for the people that I hire and employ, and I have that space to engage and give them opportunity to grow, but I also have a space for presence within the customers who come into the coffee shop, and we have a dialogue with them. I have created a space for a presence in the vendors that we work with. So I know a lot of the guys who either drive the Valley Cartage semi-truck or the FedEx semi-truck, and they come and they drop off our pallet of green beans. Like, I have created a space there to be present, to engage with them. The other vendors that we work with, the wholesale accounts, particularly in town, when I can deliver their coffee and I come through the back door, and some of the staff I know and some I don't, but like it's allowed a presence there to work. So it's very, I think it's unique when you own a business, because you have the challenge and the responsibility to kind of lead all of that culture, as opposed if you work somewhere else, like you show up and you're ultimately responsible for yourself and relating to your boss. But that's kind of the last part of playing out that faithful presence. And so one verse that kind of that I like that kind of goes with this. And So that's Matthew 28:19, which we know as the Great Commission. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. And usually that passage is used in the sense of like leaving one geographical location and going abroad to somewhere else, to another nation where they speak another language, and go forth, which that is there. And I'm not, I'm this close to having my doctorate in Greek, but I just stopped a little short, so I can't exegete that completely. But there is another, so that way of that go into the world, like that also, I think there's debate, but it can be a passive, like go as you are. So, and that's to me, like really resonates, like go as I go to the post office, as I go to the grocery store, as we go to bring our kids to school, as we go wherever, as we go from here out there up to Pincushion and go and lead a group of 8-year-olds in Y-Ski, like wherever I'm going, like there is a nation there, there is a different culture. And the people who live in Lutzen and frequent Fika are a completely different nation, completely different people than who maybe live up on Gumflint Lake or live out in Hovland or somewhere else. So we have all these different kind of culture groups around. So I just, with our faithful presence, I want that to be encouragement that we are going all the time. And that's the first go. Before you can go big, you kind of got to go small. So Sorry, I printed these notes off at church and they just like came out different than at home. But the struggle comes in within that going, because so often that going is all the time and we forget how important that going is, and we get consumed by the day-to-day and no longer think that just going somewhere quick, that I'm actually, hey, wait, pause. This is a place for me to go to create a presence and to slow down and enjoy that. And when you're in this stage of life that we're in, like 30 to 40s, young kids, like new jobs, mortgages, all this, like all that is very overwhelming and very coming at you from all different angles. So it's this stage of life that is where we're called to love more and to give more of our life away. And one kind of analogy that I thought of with this is like a snowball. So if Steph and I were out in this nice new snow and we just created this like this perfect clean white snow, a clean yard, nice and packy, and we make this little snowball, and it's like in our mind we have this vision of like the snowman we're going to make or this fort, you know. So we start rolling the snowball and all of a sudden like the snowball gets bigger really quick, and then it gets heavy, and then it's going down a hill and we can't keep up with it. We're trying to run just to slow it down. The next thing we know, it's picking up some dog poop and some sticks and some leaves, and it's not as pretty, and all of a sudden like we're losing, like, wait a minute, where's this vision that I had for this nice little snowman? And then all of a sudden like we're all just barely pushing it up a hill. So often it's like we had this vision of like, hey, we're going to go create this faithful presence, but then something else comes in which is supposed to come in, and that is the challenge there. So like working through this has been in the last 10 years very awkward, very exhausting, very dirty at times. And I want to just read a part from this book from Ronald Rollheiser called Sacred Fire. And I would say if you're in your 30s or 40s, like, I would check this book out because it's very pertinent, I think, to a lot of the things that we go through. So I'm just going to read a little bit, try to go slow so you guys can follow along. Jesus doesn't call the ready. He calls the willing. That is a consoling thought, because the heavy responsibilities of adulthood and the narrow gate of discipleship generally call us before we are really ready. And so it happens that at some stage of our lives, often we are still in our 20s, we find ourselves shouldering a whole series of adult responsibilities, carrying the load as the ones who have to raise the young, do the work, pay the bills, and make sure the planet keeps running. Like Martha in Scripture, we are in charge of the hospitality and of cooking the supper. Moreover, when we look ahead, we see that this will be the situation and our situation for the next 40 to 60 years, the longest period of our lives. The question that drives our lives needs to then be, how do I now give my life away more generously and more purely? How do I do this better? Living for something beyond ourselves is what is being asked of us during all these years. But we are rarely ready. It is comforting to know we need only to be willing. So this whole book, when I read it, it resonated a lot with me. But it's just like that honesty there is what is encouraging for me. So now we just want to share a little bit of like these life challenges or difficulties, if you will, that we've had the last few years. And this is where we hope that it's encouraging for you to, like, wherever you're at today in your stage of life, that maybe you can resonate and be like, yeah, I was there. Or maybe you're like, oh my goodness, I'm not the only one. I'm there right now. And often I think in sharing things, like, we need to be sensitive in how we respond. So I don't, like, one example I have is when you have a newborn kid, and whether you're a new mother, it's your fourth one, and you have a kid who's not sleeping through the night, and that mom or parent is exhausted, and usually the words of comfort that come that are, oh, enjoy it, like, that time will be quick. So, like, that is true, but that's probably not the most comforting thing that you can encourage a young mother with. But it might be, yeah, so I don't know why I say that, but just as a form of how we encourage and respond to each other.
So when we were preparing for this next section, I was telling Josh, I don't really want to depress you all. Because, you know, we are very visionary people, and we have this vision and calling and, like, intent and purpose and what we want. But really on a day-to-day basis, it's really hard. And so I'm going to kind of list some of those things for you so that you can, like Josh said, maybe resonate with some of those things. And hopefully open a conversation so that if you are also struggling with some of these areas, we can talk about it. But I grew up with the expectation, I had an expectation of life, and I had all these unmet expectations as I became an adult. And I think it's a verb now, right? Like adulting. And I had these expectations that when living in God's will, we would experience this radiant joy as I parent my kids and talk through these hard things and help them with their homework and work and put a meal on the table. I had these expectations, and it is not, they were not realistic. And daily I have, I still feel let down by my expectations. Sorry, I'm under very strict instructions by my children that I cannot cry or yell. So I'm really working on that right now.
So she'll cry and I'm going to yell, so watch out.
So here are some of the things that have bogged me down as we've tried to walk through this calling. We have kids. We have four of them. And they require a lot of very intentional living, a lot of failing, a lot of loving. They're very different. And that is where our playbook is changing and always changing. Daily, I feel very inadequate as a parent. Um, And it requires a lot of my energy and a lot of my time and sometimes very little reward. But we love them and we are really praying through this stage because they're amazing but hard. And in the midst of that, wow, this is like awful to enter this topic under tears. Sorry. In the midst of all of that, I discovered that I have this component in my life of emotional health. And I found myself working full-time, trying to raise 4 kids, managing a family and a home, and I couldn't do it. And so I had to take a year off, which was great, and has allowed me to step back and enter into that workforce again part-time. But the season was really hard and filled with anxiety and panic attacks, no sleep, fear, and many feelings of failure. And at some level, obviously, I'm still living in the residue of those really hard days. I found myself praying over my kids at night, Lord, despite me, please work in their heart. Because I made a lot of mistakes, and I'm still making mistakes with them. And I hope that they don't remember me as the mom crying in the basement bathroom with the door locked. I hope they remember more. But I did learn some things in this really hard time. I have a huge need for sleep. Sleep is so important. And if you haven't read The Liturgy of the Ordinary, she has a whole chapter at the end of the book on sleep. And reading that was really affirming for me to see, like, there's science behind how our bodies are designed and how we need sleep. And a third of our lives is spent in sleep. And I need sleep. I need alone time. I need silence. I need to finish a cup of coffee. Like, all these little things that I found in my day as, like, all right, I can make it, like, had this time, this reflective time. And I began calling this margin. I was setting aside margin in my life so that I had room to be restored, room to hear God, room to invite his healing into my life. And I am still working on this daily. So at the end of all of, you know, this was kind of like my crisis moment where working with a 5-month-old was just too much for me, 3 other children. And so we kind of came to this point where we had to reestablish some life rhythms for our family. And I call it like a dumping out. So, you know, if you clean out a toy bin, it's over full. You don't even know if you can play a whole game because you don't know what's in it. You dump it all out. And we had to rebuild these life rhythms that we had established. And so we have some things. If you've had a conversation with us, you've probably heard us talk about some of these things. But we've, like, ultimately what we're wanting to do is make space so that we have more, we're opening more of our rooms to God so that God is part of our life and we're not trying to control these different areas. So we're adding back in silence and solitude. Each morning, we try to wake up at 5 o'clock and have silence. And if you've been to my house, this is where I have to be really careful because, you know, we read about these things and we talk about them, but honestly, I have a 2-year-old who will wake up at 4:30 sometimes to see me at 5 o'clock. So I have to hold it loosely and I have to really trust that God is going to work in my life in that disrupted silence. And if, as Josh knows, I'm not always gracious with that. So silence and solitude, practicing Sabbath, saying no to things that are outside of our imminent calling right now.
Saying no to good things.
Yeah, sometimes good things, for sure. Saying no to things as we are trying to really rebuild this life that is healthy and is working within this vision and gives us the energy to respond to some of those unexpected things that come at us. Another really hard thing for me is, I call it the comings and goings. So we have been in Grand Marais, Cook County, for 13 of the last 15 years, and we have seen a lot of friends come and go. And what I've discovered about that is that it gives me a fear of intimacy with friends. And has hurt new relationships with friends that have moved into the area that I don't even want to have over, because what if they leave in 2 years? And leaves me with this empty question of who will be with me when I transition my kids to college? Who will have walked this season and still be here? That's a real problem for our community. So the final difficulty that we have had to face together is just technology and distractions. And it's a really easy way to escape and start comparing, take our eyes off the things in front of us. And we are really trying to limit these distractions. Because when you turn on Netflix, you don't intentionally think how it might hurt, you know, our family in the long run if to have 2 hours less sleep and, you know, wake up tired in the morning. So just really being intentional with all of these little life choices that we make, because it does, we're just really, I don't know if we're just really sensitive to some of these things, but it's really made a huge difference for us to take some of those distractions and technology out of our life. And so I am going to try to give you a picture here of my life in these recent years that's maybe one of hope and encouragement through this analogy that I have. I have started to describe the last few years as like a dark night of my soul. So that's a mystic phrase, but it's just felt really unclear and dark. And if you think of a desert, it might be vast and endless, and you don't really know where you're going. I don't know where the path is. I don't know where there's going to be water. And yet I've discovered in that vast desert, there is beauty. And it might be how the sun comes up or the sun sets or the rock formation that developed on the horizon. There is beauty to be found in that season in the desert. And the Lord gave me a psalm to tell me where he is at in that desert as I'm waiting to see what's next. So this is in Psalms 40. It says, I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to me and heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit of destruction, out of the miry bog, and set my feet upon a rock, making my feet secure. He put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. And once I saw, I mean, I knew I wasn't alone. I knew God was there. That's what's been interesting to me in this whole hard season, is we've never once doubted that God wasn't there with us. We were just wondering why it had to be so hard. Day to day, hour by hour, not really, are we really going to make it through? It doesn't, we don't even have these big trials. It's just the day to day stuff. And God's saying, no, I am there. I am on that rock, and I will lift you up and plant your feet on that with me. So though that is my story as we have had to walk through these last few years. Oh, sorry.
So for me, one, I agree with quite a bit of what Stephanie was talking about, with the rhythms of life and the distractions, like we're there holding hands and working through those. And I think one thing for me that has been a struggle, it's kind of two-part, but they go together. And it's like someone made about the difference of living a reactionary life and living a contemplative life. And that kind of put words to how I experienced life, that I was living a reactionary life, meaning that I was living a life where I was running around putting off fires. I wasn't living a life where I was out starting fires, because I was putting out fires that I did not start and fires that I probably shouldn't, whatever, be by. But it's this kind of the, it just like, yeah, I just would spend my life like thinking I had to do a lot more than I really needed to do. And I had distractions on top of that. So all of a sudden, like, I'm just out, like, trying to control things. And one thing I think from living a reactionary life, so a contemplative life would be where you are thinking about where you're at and thinking about where you want to go and those steps and how you're going to get there and be okay with a slow pace and be okay with not accomplishing a lot but just doing a few things well, but, like, having more control of those. And one result that I've experienced of living a reactionary life is that a list becomes a priority, that we make a list and we think that our well-being is, and that my well-being is, well, if I accomplish this to-do list, if I get these tasks done, then I've done well and I'm healthy. But in reality, these tasks for me have just been reactionary, like putting out things. And we get into that mindset too, like I start to view time as a commodity. Like I think time is something I can buy and trade and sell and save up and not use and then use some more here. But that's not the case. Another one too, like kind of that has come about maybe more from my professional life, but like having a reactionary life has caused me to fear man a lot more than looking and pleasing to God. Because when I'm reacting to things, I'm fearing what man's going to do or how my actions are going to result in something. So then all of a sudden, like, I'm not really thinking about a situation, not taking it to God, not prayerfully going through that, but I'm making a decision thinking that I'm appeasing this person or I'm like giving more grace here because I don't want to upset this here. But as like come to my attention, like in doing that, I'm either like actually like hurting someone if I'm giving them more grace and not like being able to communicate to think about the needs that I have and the expectations that I have. But instead, I'm reacting to this person. So I think if I give them more versus like thinking it through. So there is one reality that is true with both of those, and that is like work. And so there's the 1 Thessalonians 1:3 talks about the work of faith, the labor of love, and the steadfastness of hope. And like when I say that, man, at first it's a little depressing. It's like, man, that's a lot of work. I just want to like a day off, you know? But like our faith and our labor of love and our relationships and our hope, like those are requiring from me the same amount of energy that I am putting towards this reactionary life, but it's just a different direction. So I've been encouraged to take this time that I have and this energy, but to be able to slow down and apply it towards more a contemplative part of life there. Yeah, so that's what I have for that too. And I think one other thing too is just with the distractions that are brought up and at least in our generation, I think all generations have this, but a different thing. But, like, we live in a, like, I can't look back on my mom's life and see how my mom dealt with raising kids with an iPhone and the internet, because that did not exist. Like, our oldest daughter was born the same year that Facebook went public and the iPhone came. And all of a sudden, it's like, we're trying to figure out how to do this life within this, but these distractions have not only, like, pointed me away, but they've also really have exhausted me. Like, if you see me scrolling on something or doing something or watching a YouTube video or constantly checking, it's probably because I'm tired and I'm worn out and I don't have the energy and the focus to do the labor of love and to do the work of faith and to have that steadfastness of hope. So that, like, for me, that has been one really distraction of this presence, that in one set, I have this ideal sense of wanting to be present and faithful to that moment. But for me, it's been really hard because I've been exhausted. And when I've been exhausted, I go back towards these mind-numbing things versus putting those aside and taking the time to do the work. Yeah. So Steph is going to close us now.
So we are going to, or I am going to read a couple passages in, out of Philippians. And when selecting these verses, it was really hard for me because we are not, we don't have this all figured out. And there's parts of here that are still just a prayer for us. And so I might stop and kind of clarify or rephrase some of the words because we are really learning how to do this. So this is, starts in Philippians 2:12, and then I'll flip over to Philippians 4. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or questioning, so that you may be blameless and innocent children of God, without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. Even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Likewise, you should also be glad and rejoice with me. I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at length you have received your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Now that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned, or we are learning, in whatever situation I am, to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned, we are learning the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. So we have had a lot of changes in the last few years, and some of poverty and some of abundance and you know, financial stability, if you will. And yet it's really hard to claim that we are content, and it's a decision that we have to face every day and reflect on every day, and that we are currently doing all things in our day-to-day lives, and it's him who gives us strength to do those things. So that is where I want to close us today in that prayer. Thank you.